I'm the next speaker, and Ken, who follows, is going to cut me off when I speak too long. Magnetism, cosmic magnetism, it's an interesting story historically. It's been always going in big steps. There were sometimes huge hundreds of years where nothing has happened, and then suddenly something did. History of magnetic fields, just a pre-history that I want to talk about. There are already written records now going back to 600 BC. In China, the emperors used to go and ride with a magnetic card which showed them where to go. And Plinius also talked about magnetic fields around about 50 AD. There was virtually nothing done about magnetic fields until William Gilbert started these experiments in 1600. And here, this is maybe why I put in this, these few slides. Johannes Kepler actually suggested magnetic fields are responsible for planetary motion. So it was sort of the first application to astrophysics or astronomy. But of course, Isaac Newton came and he said, no, the apple goes down. So that was sort of the change. And then again, a huge long time nothing happened, except when Maxwell and then Heinrich Hertz started working, it became quite obvious that polarization was very important. The first astrophysical possibility of actually measuring magnetic fields, remote sensing of magnetic fields, happened when Zeeman came with his experiments, and here he is shown with Einstein visiting the laboratory. Again, this experiment was not sort of okayed by his boss, but when the boss went on holidays, he measured it, got a Nobel Prize as a result also. Yeah, okay. So polarization was playing a part in these measurements, and it became, of course, very important later. Now, it was solar astronomers, here a picture of Joe Halsey, that really came to understand, or at least to experiment with measuring polarization. Because there was a lot of discussion already there, already in 1946, that the synchrotron emission or the radio emission, cosmic noise, was due to relativistic electrons in magnetic fields. And it was quite obvious that this should be followed. And there were observations by Martin and Appleton, both saying is that solar emission was circularly polarized. Joe Halsey kept on working on polarization and later, in fact, on trying to detect the polarization of the Milky Way. Now, methods of measurement of cosmic magnetic fields are quite well known. Zeeman effect is the prime method, but it is not so easy. There are easier methods of observing magnetic fields, in particular in radio continuum, total intensity, linear polarization, Faraday rotation. All these methods have been applied to give us a huge knowledge about magnetic fields. There was the interlude that there were optical observations which have been explained by the Davis-Greenstein effect. It was the interpretation was not accepted by optical astronomers for many, many years. So, radio polarimetry started before the 1960s, but it exploded in the 1960s that I'll be showing you. The Naval Research Laboratory was the pioneer of polarization. Meyer, McCulloch, and Slonecker, they had detected already the polarization of Crab Nebula. There was a discussion that synchrotron emission is polarized. There are names like I. Gordon in Ukraine and Ginsberg who really developed the theory, and there was many searches going ahead. Now, technology was really important in measuring of the polarization to measure magnetic fields. Here, a simple rotating feet was used. I'll be showing you that there was a development which started in 1960, which is with us up to the present day. Actually, there was quite a sophisticated ferrite polarizer developed by Kuzmin and Vladsov for the Lebedev Physical Institute in this hole-in-the-ground telescope, and they also detected the 21 centimeter polarization. It was a move to high frequencies because there were many, many failed attempts to measure polarization in sources or in the Milky Way before at the lower radio frequencies. Now, Crab Nebula was, of course, the big discovery, the Rosetta Stone of astronomy. Optical polarization was discovered, but also later radio polarization by those two people that I showed before. This is a more recent map. This is what I'll be doing in my talk, that I'll be showing you how things started and maybe what are they doing today, what has been the development to today. Now, the polarization of Jupiter was the beginning of the big change in 1960s. It was in fact 1960 exactly that Radhakrishnan and Roberts published this. This was actually using only one antenna, but they said that polarization was linear. Later, actually, the Sequist, also in the 60s, showed that it was circular, and this is very interesting. Jump to today. This is a very recent observation with the LOFA system, where here on the top right-hand side, you see Cas A, but here on the bottom, on the right, is the circular polarization emission of Jupiter seen by the LOFA system. So starting from the beginnings in 1960, we are doing this in detail today. The next development was the measuring of the magnetic fields in the Milky Way. There were many failed experiments before that, and there two groups simultaneously published their results, Westerhout in Dwingeloo, showing this linear polarization, and I was involved in measuring the polarization in Cambridge. Here maybe I'll make a little diversion, a tribute to John Shaycraft, who died last month. He was my very close helper in getting this system going, a cheap antenna, disused wartime radar from the German Luftwaffe. But these types of polarization observations have given us the growth of information about magnetic fields. Here are some results about the magnetic fields in the whole galaxy, the VMAP result on top, and the combination of observations in Bonn, in Canada actually, and in Australia. Now also, on the left I show you the polarization, magnetic fields in the galactic center, very strong magnetic fields, in fact going into hundreds of Gauss, possibly recently confirmed actually by measurement of the Faraday rotation of pulsars towards the galactic center. Now, the 100 meter telescope was one of the big instruments for doing polarization observations, and this is just an example. It's a little bit older, this is 80s, but the polarization of the Milky Way has been measured there. Then later, we worked and observed the polarization of various galaxies. Magnetic fields in galaxies have been determined this way. Actually here, very often, a collaboration with VLA observation took place to put together the details of the sources and the details of the diffuse emission to show the combined magnetic field. But this is the sort of stage today. These data are available. Now, Parkes comes into the game also in 1962. The well-known observations of Bracewell detecting polarization of Centauri, who was a follow-up observations of Cooper and Price. At the same time, actually, Meyer in Washington has also detected polarization of Cygnus A. These observations had a far-reaching implication, which stay with us until today. The observations of the single sources led to very many catalogs of RMF sources which were made in the 60s. These were, for instance, compiled by Simrad, Normanding and Kronberg to show you the distribution of Faraday rotations across the sky. The idea was that this was the extragalactic sources were coming through the magnetic fields of our own Milky Way, and the Faraday rotation would say yes, tell us something. Except that in these observations, it was forgotten, or it was not done. The sources in the galactic plane were not observed, and this is, of course, where the magnetic fields are mostly. This has now been caught up by more recent observations along the galactic plane of both pulsars and extragalactic sources, giving us models of the magnetic fields of the Milky Way. This is another way of showing it. Ron Eckers was involved in one of the early versions of this. This was done actually by Oppermann et al. And now I transfer to sources. Again, 1968, the first observation of the polarization of the magnetic field of the supernova remnant was made. Single dish observations, but this on the right hand side shows you what has been done only 20 years later. This was an observation done with the VLA. It just shows you the dramatic improvement in the observational possibilities of magnetic fields using the method of observing polarization. Now, Westerbork came into the game in the 70s, early 70s, with Dr. Miley and Jan Hyckbom, mapping and observing the polarization of radio galaxies. VLA came into the game also a little bit later, doing very many very interesting high angular resolution magnetic field observations. Here only a simple result of the jet of M87 is shown. Cambridge, of course, also, and here I show you maybe the sort of three steps of development. 1968, first observations at 1.2 centimeters with the 140-foot telescope of Cygnus A. Later, the Ryle and Hargrave observations with the new Cambridge, now a Ryle telescope. And of course, 6 centimeter observation of NIRAO, which was in the 80s. So it's showing you again changes from 60s, 70s, 80s, quite dramatic improvements. And these are going on now further. I also show you the Centaurus situation on the very left-hand side, the 1962 map of Cooper and Price, where actually vectors were shown to have Faraday rotation. Then there was a single dish measurement by Junkers in Parkes telescope, and here just very recently, Ron Eckers made this picture available to me. It is the southern part of Centaurus that was mapped by Schimmelberl, Fain et al. I believe there is a lot of computation going on, and I think it will be a dramatic picture when the whole of Centaurus is mapped with the Astrea telescope measured for this evening. Intergalactic magnetic fields are also with us. They have been observed by two methods. The one is the simple one of looking at the diffuse halo towards the coma cluster. A more sophisticated observation is, of course, looking at the Faraday rotation that takes place through galactic sources passing through the coma cluster. There are fields there which in strength are surprisingly similar to the sort of field strengths that you see in galaxies. Pulsar polarization. The first pulsar polarization dates also back to the 60s. Soon after the detection of pulsars, Lyne and Smith in Jodrell Bank actually had just crossed dipoles, and they looked at the pulses, and it was quite clear they are polarized. This has been extended. And I show you on the right-hand side a collection of pulse observations which show you that pulsars have a very strange, very different type of polarization characteristics. Normally, one had this wisdom that resources, the higher the the frequency, the higher the polarization. This is not so with pulsars. Pulsars go strangely. Sometimes they are very, very highly polarized at low frequencies and very little polarization at high frequencies. They are sometimes linearly polarized, sometimes 100% circular polarized. But they still indicate that there are magnetic fields in these sources. Finally, maybe not so strongly put forward as it should be, are the Zeeman effect observations. Bolton and Wild actually suggested the use of the H1 line for measurements of magnetic fields. There have been many attempts at Jodrell Bank. The Schur actually started observing at Jodrell Bank, but it was only when he got to NRAO that he was successful. Later, other molecular lines were used. Kratcher and others have been observing OH, and even quite complex molecules have been observed out in the wavelengths. But it's always a matter of observing the circular polarization. It's also a very, very difficult technical problem to get the feeds right to give you circular polarization rather than pick up some spurious signals. Question is, where do we go in the future? I just show you here a high frequency 345 gigahertz map that came from Planck. It's a polarized emission. Here the problem comes, a lot of this is from dust, but dust which is also held in place by magnetic fields. And the other thing which is actually very, very nice from my point of view, at the low frequencies, we are getting also the first polarization maps, in other words, starting the magnetic fields at low frequencies. This was a very unexpected result, that if you go to very high angular resolution, you can see a lot of structure in the polarization, indicating structure both in the magnetic fields and, of course, in the interstellar medium. So, magnetic fields have been grossly neglected. I think they should be given more prominence, or at least they are being given more prominence. In particular, we are waiting for SKA. When the SKA is there, there will be, I'm sure, progress again in the study of magnetic fields. And I thank you.
Can you take your own questions while I talk?
Okay. The technical part has to be all the questions.
Two more names for early polarization. Ruby Kane Scott from the Solar Group in Australia. And Joe Ross. Yeah, yeah,
optical, and Ruby Payne Scott and Little actually did some of the follow-up observations of D.F. Martin. D.F. Martin was the very early ones. They were in the 50s. D.F. Martin was 46.
So.
Yeah, no, I mean, she was the papers by Ruby and Alex Little on polarization evidence in the 50s. 51. I can give you a. Yes?
Richard, apropos your current discussion on the next topic, I noticed you didn't mention the polarization of the sun's simulation that has been seen. So the polarized structures not only exist at our microlight scale, but the alignment between the polarized structure and the continuum structure is also measurable now.
I think that's coming up, especially with the radioastron object and in this simulation of pulsars, right?
The simulation of the magnets.
Oh, that's correct, sorry, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anybody else?